Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Speaker Speak. You know, it's the show that informs, inspires, and challenges. It's real talk from real people about real things. And it is truly the show where the guests themselves get to do a lot of the speaking. Even though it's Mr. Speaker Speak, they do most of the talking. And so you can learn more about me at VincentTEdwards.com, and you can visit my online community at VincentOnDemand.com. That's where you can join my community and get exclusive training videos that will help you to pivot into your purpose with power and precision. And today I have an absolutely wonderful guest, and we're going to talk about, I call it emotions and feelings and how you can deal with things. But my guest is Karen Howard, and we're going to talk about her book and the work that she's done around the topic of upset is emotional. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today, because in this challenging and changing world of politics and things that we deal with in our lives, you know, stress is there and we can feel a certain way, but how do we deal with it? How do we navigate those waters? What is our communication like? What is our life like? And so we're going to find out a little bit about that today. But like always here on Mr. Speaker Speaks, Heavenly Father, we truly thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for my guest today who is coming to share her experience, her expertise, to help people know how to remain calm, not just amid political chaos, but how to remain calm in their personal and professional lives. So now, Father, we just ask for your presence to be here to lead and to guide this conversation so that it will be beneficial to all that hear, whatever the platform, whatever the time frame, that they will hear this podcast, this episode, and walk away with something that will help them improve their life and the lives of others. And we will give you all the praise and all the glory in your son Jesus's name. Amen. And today we're going to share an inspirational passage of scripture that ties in today about your thoughts. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Think on these things. And that comes from Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. And my guest today is Karen Howard, an author of the book Upset is Optional. You know, political anxiety is really at an all-time high these days. I mean, we just recently had an election just about 8-9 days ago, and 8 out of 10 Americans are describing U.S. politics as divisive, corrupt, messy, and indeed polarized, and opposite party members as immoral. Karen Howard, a former Congressional Committee staff member and executive director of Organic and Natural Health Association, says engaging in daily practices found in her new book, Upset is Optional, can ease tension and help navigate political conversations without, and I love this part, without compromising relationships. And so she's going to talk with us about 4 practical strategies from her book to help manage anger and, you know, being upset, whether it's triggered by politics or other sources. I mean, she has an extensive bio. She's a visionary leader with 4 decades of experience in healthcare policy, government relations, and organizational leadership. And I love that, organizational leadership, because everything rises and falls on leadership. And that is key. And I love how John Maxwell talks about his levels of leadership and understanding it ranges from positional authority all the way up to some different levels. So she is deals with organizational leadership, the author of Upset is Optional, Say Goodbye to Unnecessary Suffering. Her career has been defined by her unwavering commitment to advancing healthcare initiatives and driving change through strategic advocacy and collaboration. And I'm going to stop there. I love that. The concept of collaboration, working together to solve different issues. Karen, welcome to Mr. Speaker Speaks.
It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it is a pleasure to have you. But before we really dive into this, I want to ask this question. If you yourself could put up a billboard right now with one message for the world to see, what would that billboard say?
That's a good one. I mean, I think I go to what you've already said, which is suffering is not optional. Upset is optional. And, or maybe better, your body is smarter than your brain.
Body is smarter than your brain. Dive a little deeper into that one.
Well, I mean, we think that we believe that our brain is, you know, the most important organ that we have, right? Because this is how we function throughout the day. Everything, all of our thoughts and all of our body motions are directed by our brain. But the reality is that our brain has such a huge impact on the health of our body. And we just don't listen to it. So when you think about something that happens, driving in the car, somebody cuts you off, you honk the horn, your whole body tells you exactly what's going on. Your shoulders going like this, you grab the steering wheel, you might be yelling at the same time, you've slammed on the brakes. Your body has that immediate reaction. So if we learn to listen to our body, we'll know before we get to the point where we're already completely upset. It's very wise.
Wow. I love it. I love it. And I came across a couple quotes, and I'd like to see your thoughts about these as they relate to the topic today. And one states, your emotions are the slaves to your thoughts, and you are the slave to your emotions. And then thoughts lead to feelings. Feelings lead to actions. Actions lead to results. Relative to what we're talking about, what are your thoughts about those two quotes?
I think that thoughts leading to action is absolutely 100% true. I'm a very action-oriented figure. And if you don't pay attention to how your thoughts are impacting your actual actions, so you can have a thought and an action that can be really negative, right? So you can have an argument with a spouse, a friend. You can get mad at your dog. You can, you know, all these things. They're thoughts. They're driven by action, reaction. And you kind of, it's sort of almost like an out-of-body experience. You're not actually paying attention. I'll give you an example. So my mentor who guided me through these practices was an acupuncturist, and he had a patient who had asthma. And as he was receiving acupuncture treatment, he learned and would say this to Bob, asthma is my teacher. I know that I'm in trouble when my asthma flares up, that my emotions have taken over my ability to manage my own physical body. So I can control my asthma by listening to my emotions and how I feel in my body before I let that happen. So it's almost like a reverse kind of psychology.
Excellent. Your book suggests that being upset is optional. How did you personally come to this realization?
Many, many life lessons. I can remember at one point, and I was in the process of trying to figure out what to do with my marriage. And again, my mentor and I were talking, and he said, it's time for you to find a new story. Like, you have a story, like, and you're living in the story. So you need to find a new story. And I can remember thinking to myself, this is a moment in time. I kind of put myself in a box where I couldn't do anybody any harm, but I wasn't doing anybody any help either. So I think being able to find that space where you're being really honest with how you are in your physical being and connecting that to your emotional range and being able to work through relationships. So to finish that part of the story, when it became time to really finalize what was happening, I managed to negotiate with a mediator instead of ever engaging a lawyer. And it was because I had put the priority of my relationship with my kids and our family unit in charge. Like everything else was just a side effect. And that became my driving force in terms of being able to separate from a long-term relationship and ensure that we could still gather as a family unit, still support each other when we need to. And it really made all the difference in the world. And I really credit these practices for that.
Excellent. I love that. And I love that you shared a personal story, because that allows people to actually relate. Because a lot of times we read things or we hear things and it appears that it is just book knowledge or theory. But when someone has actually gone through it, it brings it to the table, to the forefront, and it makes it real. Which leads me to my next question. What are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about managing their emotions?
I think people think they can do one of two things. They can bottle it up and it can just sit there and I will just go about my life. And I think the majority of people do that. I think other people, and I've lived with both, I think other people believe that letting your emotions out is a healthy release and makes the world a better place. I don't think either one is the right solution. I think knowing in your heart and your gut and your shoulders and your head and where it hurts, and getting really comfortable with those feelings of your body itself will point you to saying what's going on, like what's wrong. So there's a practice in there about 5 symptoms that lead to an illness. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to learn in my life. And it took me a long time to figure out how my stress worked through my body and ended up in a, like I had to go to the chiropractor. And it was this constant pattern of behavior that I had adopted in terms of how I dealt with my personal stress. So this concept of like being actually in your body and knowing your body is not a joke. It's like life or death. You know, and that was what we used to learn when we were learning the practices. It's like, this is the most important thing you can know, is that your body is smarter than your brain.
Wow. And it also ties into something my executive coach and I talk about, the whole concept of pain. And, you know, I always say, you know, people do things for two reasons, pain or pleasure. And both of them are emotions. But the concept, when you look at pain and you experience it, what pain is, it's a communicator, like what you were saying. It's communicating to you that something is going on and something needs to possibly change, or you need to do something differently. So I love the way you said that, but it really emphasizes the fact that pain itself is a communicator. Can you elaborate on the concept of upset is optional and how it applies to the current political stress and what's going on today?
Well, it is, as someone remarked to me, it was up on Capitol Hill today at the during the confirmation of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So as someone commented to me, it is not going to change. It is now, you know, we've gone through this for several years. We can think back several years ago when people considered the Thanksgiving table together. We've made it through this, and now we've had, you know, whatever familial kinds of reactions we've had, they've been many. And now we have 4 years of a completely different paradigm. So we have to be, we have to find a new way to be through this. You know? So being in a situation where people have really strong opinions and beliefs really requires you learn how to be an observer and not always be reactive. And if you're an observer, that means you can listen. So deep listening is really so important, not just hearing, not just like while you're listening, you're thinking, but I disagree. This is how I feel. It isn't about that. It's like being in a space where you can allow people the benefit of being heard. And even if you disagree with them, you can make a decision while you're listening to that about how to behave. Like, you know, so you're not being reactive all the time. And I think in the long run, I mean, there are many things positive that can come out of this, whatever this is to you. For me, it's been a huge challenge because I've been so deeply embodied in politics since I was in second grade. So I've always loved the sport I've always loved the challenge. And now I'm in a situation where content is so much more important and intention is so huge in terms of the work I want to do in the short term that I have on earth. And I think having intention, these are two of my new words, having intention and love in everything I do transforms how I look at opposition.
I love that because, you know, those are two good words. And I'll go with the second one first, love. That is key, doing everything in love, because, you know, on love hangs everything. How I feel about a situation or an individual. And then that whole concept of being intentional, because nothing just happens by accident. You know, even your personal professional development, all of that has to be intentional. Even you being in politics since the second grade and you love it, it had to be intentional. And we have to be intentional about loving, but in all the things that we do. I just love that and hearing that from you. You have a lot of tools people can use and in your book, but let's just address a few of them. When you're talking about creating a word wall, what is that and what does it help someone to do?
I love this practice because I build on it all the time. So when we first started this election campaign, there were two men that were running. And I used to refer to them as Martha Washington and Mary Todd Lincoln in interviews, because no one knew who to be angry with. So think about, you know, like, words have such a huge impact on how people hear you. So if you're like, if you're wandering around and upset all the time, you need to have like a group of words that you can go and relate to. And it's like, oh, sometimes mine's just like, breathe. I mean, so you create this language. Like, I'm really bad at using, and I'm not talking about just saying it loud. I'm talking about what you use in your head. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite go-tos when I'm like cranky or not happy with something is moron. Mm-hmm. You got to lose that word. It's ridiculously judgmental. And yeah. So, you know, you replace moron with that's interesting. So if your initial reaction is like enter word, replace it with banana. You just upset your brain and your breathing so that you have this list of words that you would rather use, and list of words that you can use. I've loved this over the years. I've known people who've always, instead of cursing, they've always used a fun word. So it's on that, but it's also taking all that energy away from your chests and your shoulders, and you just don't use that other language. It makes a huge difference in your body.
Oh, yes. The choice of words. And because I had a mentor of mine tell me that, you know, there is no in basket for words. I mean, there's no basket, because once you say it, it's gone and it's already released. And so you can't, like, when you put something in someone's in basket or even recall an email, it's not possible when you're using words in verbal communication. Yeah. And so, and it just lets me know that, you know, the world's best-selling book of all time says life and death, they reside in the power of the tongue. And that is a little instrument that is hard to tame. But when you can do something like you say, replace words with a better selection or choice of words, now it requires me to, one, do a little bit of research and increase my vocabulary.
Hey, there's another word. Like, when you talk about love, there is no more fun word to use in a corporate environment than love. It literally, you watch people sit back in their chair. What do you mean? We're talking about love, not money. And I mean, it is, that is one of my words that I've added this year. And it is an interesting response. It is, and it's genuine. I mean it when I say it. Like, I do this work for love. And people are like, oh, did you just say the word love? It's if you can be creative and speak from your own heart, and that's why I think it's all about intention. That's where I say, you know, you'll start to really enjoy being able to express yourself in such a positive way.
Most definitely. And I joke with people at work, because even when I'm conducting training sessions, I'll always ask them, I said, how many of you love what you do? you know, you're here. I was like, how many of you really love what you do? And very few people raise their hands. And mm-hmm. I tell them all the time, it's like, I love what I do. I would do what I do, even if I didn't get paid to do it. But I love that they do pay me to do it. And so, but when you do that and you see how it just changes the entire atmosphere. So yes. I really, really love that. And now I was talking about reframe your reactions. Oh, I would really want to hear about this one.
I'm just going to give you like the honest truth on this one. I have my own challenges with politics these days. And I do love politics. And when the election results happened, I managed through. I was not inordinately happy about it. And then I remembered where there's fear, there is opportunity. Where there's great fear, there is great opportunity. And I met with one of my board members who's basically had his head in his hands. And I said, you're a grandfather. Pick your head up. You have the issue of the day that these people will love. And I have reframed how I do my work now around the core of the central mission of the organization I work for, the Organic and Natural Health Association. And I have said, here is my opportunity. This is my oyster. I can shut out the rest of the noise. And of course, you know, there'll be ups and downs and problems and things that will scare us all to death or make us all elated. But in my zone, I have found my place where I have been able to reframe how I feel about the entirety of the system. Now, that's a big reframing. There are lots of other ways to small reframe, whether it's an argument with a friend, or it's trying to figure out why your child's crying and reframing it and saying, not what's wrong, but honey, do you feel like somewhere in your body, do you hurt? You know, just being able to reframe your thoughts so you can better communicate and not lose your sense of self, you know, like not fall into the victimhood of upset.
Is there any relationship with our body's physical state that influence our ability to reframe our emotions effectively?
That's really good. I mean, I tend to, yes, I do think there is. I think you can think about it all you want. And you can go through the motions and you can like write the letters and do this and pick the projects. But until you actually are reframing it around your intention and why you're doing it, you will not be able to sustain the level of commitment and energy and love that you have for what you want. And that could be a relationship. It could be a job. It could be any of those things. So I think, yes, you can certainly do it just by the book. And you won't maintain the level of commitment and energy and brightness to what you're trying to accomplish. Therefore, you'll diminish your ability to be effective if you're not really feeling it. So that reframing has to be, that has to mean something in here. That has to really, you have to really feel it. And for me, it's in my gut. I know I'm doing the right thing in my gut. If I'm not doing the right thing in my gut, I know I'm a little off.
And being in politics, I'll pray for you. It's a tough world. I'll never forget when I was a senior in high school, my calculus teacher looked at me and she said, Vincent, you need to be in politics. And I was like, not happening. I'm not going to do that. And I say that to ask you this question. Being in such a charged, high-paced environment, can you share a time when you had a politically charged conversation that could have escalated, but it didn't because you utilized the principles in the book?
Yes. I mean, I think now I'm not sure I can go a week without that happening. I'm like, so right now I'm into MAHA. So Make America Healthy Again.
Okay.
And this is the subject matter of the day. And we have obviously our own agenda in terms of dietary supplements and health for humanity, health of the planet in particular, for the sake of having healthy people. Like that's what we put first. So we have our priorities. And I know that there are people who are like, I enter into conversations with people who are vehemently charged with the conventional medical world. So I have these conversations quite often, quite often. And now with there's being so much high level animosity, I have friends that don't even want to hear what I have to say about why I can support this, at least this component of the administration. And I would not be able to stand up in front of a room at my conference last week and take that chance and make introductions of people that we had never invited before. I have colleagues in the industry, press in the industry, that are always questioning us about why we would want to do this. It's all very new right now. And I hang on to that like hard, because I know that that's this process for me and the content will work for the largest majority of people that we could possibly reach. So I'm well practiced in it at the moment. I'm like living it every day. It's real. It's very real.
Which leads me into this, since you're in it every day. The other thing you talk about is set your mood. Is it like I can just go to the dial today? Oh, I want to feel this way. And then, oh, I walk out of this. No, I got to change it. Because back in the day I'll date myself, we used to have these mood rings that we used to wear, and they would change colors. And, oh, you feel this way. So talk to us about setting your mood.
Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, this all sounds really wonderful, but this does actually take work. So we would have assignments every 6 weeks. We'd have one practice and we'd have to document how it went. So this happened. This is how I felt in my body. This is the practice I use. And this is the outcome of how I felt in my body every day for 6 weeks before we'd move to a new practice. So I completely resonate with that. I mean, if you talk about mood, so the first thing you do in the morning is you get up, put your feet on the floor, read the newspaper, get a cup of coffee, walk the dog. The first thing we need to do every day is design our mood. And if we can do it before your feet hit the floor, and pick one. So mine is always calm. And sometimes I don't get to it until I'm walking the dog in the woods. But it's always calm. And then the really hard part is to figure out when you leave it. So when you lose calm every day, like have a reminder. I used to have like rubber bands, and when I realized I wasn't calm, I'd like snap myself. So I had that physical reaction to be able to bring myself back to, what did you promise yourself today? You promised yourself you would be calm. But that's just me. Other people divine their days with scripture, but always with this intent is like, how am I going to feel in my body? That's the real key, so that you can train yourself. You literally remind yourself over and over, and you sticky notes on your computer, calm lipstick on messages, like all these practices on your mirrors, like whatever you need to do. Got road rage, put a sticky on the center of your steering wheel. And like, if we go to blow the horn, it's going to say calm. So there are a lot of concrete ways to train your body. It just doesn't come naturally all the time.
Wow. So how can small daily mindful practices help to create long-term emotional resilience?
Well, I mean, we all have to go through life. I mean, we don't get out easy. We don't get out unscathed. We will all suffer at some points. I think that for me, it's all about having my intention is to serve 7 generations. And by that, I mean 3 that came before me, 3 that I may never know that come after me in the one that I'm sitting in. And when I can hold that space and I know I'm in that place, then all of this flows with great ease. And I've quit my job at least twice because I realized I wasn't leading my life with that intention. And that's mine. But the 7 generations really spoke to me. It's rooted in Native American culture, the grandmothers. And it's what's kept me being able over all this time and many years now to be able to say, am I in the right place? Am I on the right path? Is this what I need to be doing? Is it serving those 7 generations? And I think, you know, that we see that culturally in many different ways in how we walk through religion and other kinds of, you know, meditations, that's my secret to being able to maintain it.
So when you're talking about serving seven generations, that's really a one-to-many relationship. How does one go about relating to all of those people to where it can be not only effective but efficient?
Well, I don't know. Like, I'll tell you, like, I never knew my biological father. I only met him once. I have grandparents that, I lost at a very young age, some I never knew. And at the same time, I know that I didn't get here alone. And I'm a product of all of these relationships from the past. And I feel like I owe the planet something back on that. It was a God-given gift, correct? So I really feel deeply about that, just in terms of I have been given the gift of life and this space on the planet. I'm going to do the best I can with it. And the reason I continue to do that work is because in all the chaos, this little bit of Karen can do what she does in this moment that hopefully will make a difference to the generations that come. If I'm going to be the CEO of a water bottling company, all they're doing is putting water in plastic bottles. That's not what I signed up for. That's not serving anyone. There's plenty of water in plastic bottles. That's why I quit. So that's kind of how I look at it. I may never have grandchildren. I'm kind of looking at that now. Doesn't mean that there won't be people coming after me that I shouldn't be taking care of as best I can now.
Excellent. The concept of serving and serving a lot of people, because the world's bestseller again says, everybody wants to be great, but the greatest are those who serve. The greatest are those who serve, and that's a hard thing to do, and to do it openly, honestly, willingly, and with your words, intentionally doing it. And lovingly doing it. So that is that whole concept of truly being a servant. And you are a servant. I mean, you work in the public sector. I work in state government as well. And so, we're all servants. So with that being said, in the midst of it all and the chaos that you have, all I could think about was, wow, I'm dating myself in this whole political environment, the old Schoolhouse Rock. I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill. And everything that goes on, and then the whole concept of, legislation is just like sausage being made. In the midst of all of this and this climate, how do you, or how can you help people be reassured that their voice matters, their words matter?
Well, I think one, people should remember, despite whatever outcome they wanted, this was the closest election that we've ever seen. And that means that it's going to be much more difficult to govern. But that means that everything that you do and everything you put into it matters that much more. Also, as I said during the campaign over and over, this trickles down and it goes back up. Like we, there are, with one exception, the people who have run for the highest office in the land have held office maybe all the way down to, dog catcher. So we can't abdicate our responsibility for government because we don't like where it is now, because we're still building government. We're only like not even 250 years old. So we got little kids who are really depending on us to continue to do this. We got the school boards, the dog catchers, the mayor, the city councils, all these people impact our lives on a daily basis. And it would be foolish for people to just say, I can't do politics anymore. You cannot not do politics. It's like it's in our DNA to take care of one another. We have a system for that. Other countries have different systems. They're not able to do this. So we can't just say, I don't like it anymore. I'm going to go bury my head in that sand and then expect a different outcome. Because sounds old and trivial, but every vote counts. And this really proves every vote counts.
And before we find out how our my listening audience can find out more about you and get a copy of your book, here's one question, because you're on Capitol Hill and you're dealing with people, and they go their own direction, but we have to come home. We have to interact with our spouses. our cousins, our nephews, our aunts, and uncles. How do we get along from this whole standpoint of upset is optional with our family, friends, and colleagues who may not agree with our political views during this time? Because one phrase I hear people say all the time, don't talk religion and don't talk politics, but you need to talk both.
Yes. Yes. So my brother and I have always been able to talk about everything, and not always on the same page. And I have a nephew who kind of went a different way this time. And so at Thanksgiving, perfect example, right? Everything's going swimmingly well until it wasn't. And I was in a state of like I quit breathing, forget deep breathing. I just quit breathing completely. And it was like, I really just don't understand what just happened. I'm like, what? I was so perplexed. And to both our credit, you know, the room kind of cleared, literally cleared out. Fortunately, dessert was just done. And we were able to come back to the table and work through that. So I think you have to have a forgiving, you have to be forgiving of yourself and the person that you're with. And you have to be an observer. You don't need to engage all the time in these conversations. You need to know what you want to talk about and what you don't. Having ground rules is not a bad idea. If you know you're going to be in strong disagreement, set the room so you won't walk into minefields. Like, be aware. I was just caught off guard, and he didn't realize he was going to catch me off guard. I figure Maureen Dowd, who's a New York Times columnist, and her brother are complete opposites. If they can figure it out at the holiday, any of us can. So it's doable. It just does require attention, a good choice of language, and the ability to deeply breathe so that you can get your sense of self back. Deeply breathing is a very good practice.
Yeah, deep breathing helps, you know, because sometimes just breathe. There's just a song that one of my favorite gospel artists sings, and it is called Breathe. It's by Jonathan McReynolds. And so my guest today on the show is Karen Howard, and her book is Upset is Optional. It's a choice. And so what I'd like for you to do now, Karen, is how can the listening audience actually get a copy of your book?
You can go to www.upsetisoptional. There's karma for you. It was available. And you can learn about my mentor and the work that he did with his practices. He was a wonderful human being. And then you can also order the book from there on Amazon. And Kindle or hard copy, paperback.
And what do you want readers to walk away with after they complete your book? I mean, you have practices there, but what is the desired outcome?
I would hope that everybody can walk away and resonate with some element of the story or a practice that they can grasp, and then take that and own it and just do that, if nothing else. So that they have one practice that they're like, I get that I have control over how my body responds, and I can make those changes physically so that I'm not hurting verbally or physically. Gosh, forget, you know, that's even a possibility. So I would just hope that there's something in the stories that can resonate with each reader and some practice that they take.
Excellent. And so, Karen, I just want to thank you on today for being an excellent guest and sharing these things that we can do, because life is all about relationships. I mean, and people do business with people they know and like. However, we have to learn to live with people from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, and also different political viewpoints. And we don't need to get upset because it's optional. It's all about making choices. And with that being said, I'm going to give you the last word. What is it that you would like to say on this evening?
Take home two words, love and intention, and integrate them into your day tomorrow and see how it changes your outcome.
Putting it to use.
Put it
right
to use.
Away. Well, Karen, I just want to say thank you. Hopefully this was good for you.
Enjoy
it. Oh, it's going to be good for the listening audience. And so, everyone, go to the website, upsetisoptional.com. Get a copy of the book. Read the book. And what I always say is don't just read the book, but implement at least one thing that's in the book. Remember, visit me at vincenttedwards.com and join the online community at vincentondemand.com. You know what I say. Life, it's all about purpose. And the question becomes, are you living yours? And all that you do, be magnificent. And until next time, be good, be blessed, but most of all, be a blessing to someone. You know how you can bless them? Just love them. Take care, my friends, and be blessed.